Chapter 11, the Transcendental Aspect of Devotional Service. So, and servantship, as Srila Rupa Goswami says, in the opinion of the karmis, food of workers, offering the results of karma is called servitorship. But according to Vaishnava acharyas, like Rupa Goswami, servitorship means constant engagement in some kind of service to the Lord. In the Skanda Purana, it is said, those who are attached to ritualistic activities, the four orders of social life and the four orders of spiritual life, are considered devotees. But when devotees are actually engaged in offering service to the Lord directly, these must be bhagavatas, or pure devotees. Those who are engaged in fruitive activities or prescribed duties according to the four orders of social and spiritual life are not actually pure devotees. But still, because they are offering the results to the Lord, they are accepted as devotees. When one has no such desire but acts spontaneously out of love of God, such a person must be accepted as a pure devotee. The conditioned souls who have come into contact with the material world are all more or less desirous of lording it over material nature. The system of varnashrama and the prescribed duties under this system are so designed that the conditioned soul may enjoy in the material world according to his desire for sense gratification, at the same time gradually become elevated to spiritual understanding. Under these prescribed duties of varna and ashram, there are many activities which belong to devotional service in Krishna consciousness. Those devotees who are householders accept Vedic ritualistic performances as well as the prescribed duties of devotional service, because both are meant for satisfying Krishna. When householder devotees perform some Vedic ritualistic duties, they do not satisfy Krishna. As we have previously discussed, any activity aimed at satisfy. When householder devotees perform some Vedic ritualistic duties, they do so to satisfy Krishna. Okay, that makes sense. As have previously been discussed, any activity aiming at satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead is considered Srila Rupa Goswami's devotional service. Goswami describes one who is fit for becoming engaged in devotional service. He says that persons who are neophytes and who have developed a little love of Godhead are not interested in the activities of sense gratification in proportion to their devotion. But if there is still some attraction for sense gratifying activities, then the result of such activities should be offered to Krishna. This is also called engagement in the service of the Lord, with the Lord as the master and the worker as the servant. In the Naradiya Purana, there's a statement of how this servitorship is transcendental. It is said there that a person who is constantly engaged in devotional service by his body, mind, and words, or even a person who is not practically engaged but simply desiring to be so, is considered to be liberated. So now we're getting up to kind of more finer points of devotional service, meaning the activities have been described, but now we're getting mentality, a little bit into the elements that are being dealt with here, that are required. So here then, in servitorship, then basically, yeah. If we discuss, like with the other, see, the Varnashram system has come from the Lord. And by rendering, engaging in the Varnashram system, then that is for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. That is really the only purpose of it. Though, in it we see that one is able to fulfill one's own desires also. That is also part of what happens with the Varnashram system. So now there are those who take that, here he mentions the fruitive workers, so then they are very interested in the results, while devotees are interested in pleasing Krishna. So for them, then, they are not just simply engaged in the Varnashram system, they're also engaged in other aspects of devotional service that allows them, how do you say? That gives them more direct understanding or remembrance of the Lord. And so Rupa Goswami says, then someone who is always engaged, therefore, in service, then that is the definition of devotee. Otherwise, for the fruitive worker, it's just someone who is engaged in Varnashram as a devotee. Because the Varnashram system is meant to please the Lord. Though we see that for the fruitive workers it's a little bit more indirect. They're more worried about their own facilities. So the devotee then engages in these activities for pleasing the Lord. So one who does not have attachment for the Varnashram system, does not have attachment for sense gratification, they are called pure devotees. And then those who still have some attachment for their own sense gratification and some attachment to the aspects of the Varnashram system, then that is not called in this way pure devotional service. Because in here I think Rupa Goswami's... So pure devotional service here is basically meaning just there is no mix of anything. Because otherwise we see here is those who are engaging in the service. One who is engaged or one who is desiring to be engaged is liberated. So then we're talking beyond this platform. This gets into a very fine point here, is depending upon the situation then and who one is speaking to, the audience, then various aspects of this whole scenario will be presented or emphasized. So nectar of devotion is the complete science. So it has everything in it about devotional service. And it is describing from the very beginning stages up to and then bhakti, prema, the various qualities of the Lord and the relationships with the Lord. So now in this, because now we're getting very close to the spontaneous devotional service, and Prabhupada's mentioned, did he mention here? Did we read something about spontaneous devotional service? Means definition was, is that when one comes to, we talked about Siddha Sarup and all that, Sarup Siddhi. Oh, okay, so that's in the next chapters. So we have to always remember, and not always remember, but in here we come to this point. Where it appears that the acharyas sometimes even have different opinions. But they're not having different opinions. It is just simply the presentation for the time, place, and circumstance. So now, if we look at it in its like pure form, until we get to devotional, pure devotional service, or actually prema bhakti, it's not technically called devotional service. Because devotional service means it is done with devotion. And devotion means it is always there. Right? Something that's sometimes there, sometimes not there, is not considered perfection. Because in the spiritual platform, a level of consciousness is always there, right? The residents of the spiritual realm, they always have a particular bhava that's called sthayi, relationship with Krishna. It's fixed. Sthayi means fixed. It's always there. So it's not that sometimes they have, sometimes they don't. So this point where sometimes you have, sometimes you don't, how much is there, one is a devotee. How much is not there, then that aspect means we're not steady. One is counted as a devotee because the whole purpose is pleasing Krishna. So Krishna and the advanced personalities, like Rupa Goswami, sees that person as devotee. It's saying here, even someone who's following nicely the Varnashram system, then is considered a devotee. Because they're sura. They're following God's order. And by following God's order, this is the mood of servitorship, right? God is there, He's the Lord, He's made this system of Varnashram following God by pleasing Him, we're doing it. Therefore, they're called devotees. That's why how the Karmis even see themselves as devotees, because they're doing it ultimately for the Lord. But in between, they don't have necessarily the idea at all of pure devotional service. They just know they want to enjoy themselves, and they are pious in their desires. They don't want to enjoy it. They're not praying to God to, you know, that the McDonald's is open 24 hours a day or something like this. They in pious ways want to enjoy. You know, even in the ways of facilitating being, you know, lords of the material world, like Lord Brahma and his sons, you know, all the Prajapatis, and all these very big demigods who have taken great responsibility on behalf of the Lord, but they're more attached to that. Right? So then these aspects then keep them from pure devotional service. So if we look at it really technically, then that is not actually devotee. Devotee means always fixed. So then the term uses is a aspiring devotee or a sadhaka, someone who is practicing devotional service. That's why Prabhupada always uses devotional service in practice. It means one's practicing it. One hasn't become that. Just like if you're learning something new, you practice the techniques of it. So you can't say that you are that expert. Like one is learning music, then one can't say that one is starting out and learning all the different notes and different patterns of the notes. One can't say that one is a musician. But one is an aspiring musician. And the musicians know if you just keep this up and regularly practice and don't deviate from this, with time, then you'll become a very good musician. Right? Especially if you associate with other musicians. Right? Then you gain that, what is the mood, the life of the music. So by devotional service being a science, then by following it, practicing it in the association of devotees in a favorable way according to the scriptures, then one will come to that platform. Therefore, they're all counted as within the realm of devotional service. Right? So depending upon the situation and who the audience is, then we see that the acharyas will take the point of everybody is involved in devotional service, or pure devotional service is pure devotional service, bhava bhakti is bhava bhakti, and sadhana bhakti is devotional service and practice. Right? So they give three distinct categories. And only from prema is it called pure devotional service. So that makes sense for us. We will see the sadhana bhakti is very big. Bhava bhakti is very far off, and prema bhakti is like ultimate goal. But if one is dealing from the platform of prema, prema bhakti technically has 10 levels. Right? The first, the bud of it, is bhava. And then what we know is prema bhakti, that's the second level. Beyond that, there's 8 more levels up to mahabhava. But the reason that is not emphasized, because those other 8 platforms can only be experienced in a spiritual body. The material body cannot handle the ecstasy beyond prema, because it's just too rough. Prema, it's like there's, you know, basically, how do you say? When you go beyond prema, how do you say? so many of the symptoms are happening at one time, and so many things are being experienced at one time with all the different senses, that this body can't handle it. Right? So it's not even discussed. One doesn't have to worry about it. And someone who's on that platform, you don't have to discuss those aspects much either. Right? They're there so that one knows that they're there, and one then puts the whole process in perspective. So that's why for the acharyas especially, it's very easy to, if need be, take that platform. You know, so then if you're trying to encourage someone who, especially when they're beginning stages of devotional service, then one always emphasizes more that this is devotional service and that one should perform these activities. And then if one is Amrita Kuda Idam Asanam. So then so we have to be able to understand and not become either overly proud or discouraged. See, the problem, if you only emphasize the sadhana bhakti side and that this is devotional service, becomes the sadhaka, the tendency is then the tendency is proud. They're a little bit accomplished in their sadhana. You know, they get their rounds done, or, you know, they do a little thing and they become proud. You know, and then one is big, big devotee and all these things. If one overemphasizes the other way, then only till you come to prema and everything below that's not actually a devotee. You know, they're aspiring devotees of various levels. Then one becomes discouraged and feels one cannot, you know, one will not be able to do it. It's too far. You know? So therefore, we see that the acharyas, Baladeva especially, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada, especially emphasizes the point of the whole gamut is devotional service. Though it's in those parts, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. And then sometimes we'll see Vishwanath, and sometimes even Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then they will divide it up and say, this is that. So just depending upon who is your audience, then you will be able to understand these things. Does that make some sense? So therefore you're going to see in this point where it's saying that someone who is just following the varnashram, then, and they're following nicely according to the scriptures, they're devotees because they're serving the Lord, because the Lord has given these scriptures and given varnashram, and he expects it to be followed, and they're following it. So therefore they're worshiping the Lord in servitorship. But Rupa Goswami adds in, because we have the whole point of the goal being pure and alloyed devotional service, that we have to add to that, that it's specifically activities are being done to directly try to please the Lord also, rather than just indirectly, that one has followed the activities of varnashram. And then of those, then we see those who are still attached to the facilities and other things of the varnashram system, then that is the more neophyte stage, and those who have given up that attachment, then they're called pure devotees. So we see that even those who are pure devotees, they are still following the varnashram system. You'll never see where they're not following. There's a few exceptional cases where you see that the pure devotees are not following the varnashram system. Like Rishabhdev, when he's out rolling on the ground in ecstasy and rolling around in his own stool. Sukadev Goswami, when he's walking around naked and people pass urine on him and harass him and this, and he couldn't care less. You know, these are examples of someone who is Uttamadhikari, doesn't follow the varnashram system. But generally you'll see all other devotees in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, they're following it. Like that. Because that then sets the proper example. Right? By Rishabhdev performing his activities, then there was someone who saw this and started a process of called Jada Yoga. And that they tried to imitate Rishabdev. Right? And so you see elements of that, I think, in Jainism today. They do things, they pull out all their hairs once a year and do all kinds of funny things. So it's taking that kind of mood. So because of this, then they imitate. Because the neophyte, generally, the externals, see to think if he only has attended or done, then that is one has attained perfection. You have all this, have the right dress. You know, if you have the right jargon, you know, certain things you do, then that's considered advanced. Like I remember, go back like 20 years or so or more. You know, those whoever had the biggest beads, that was like a sign of like real serious advancement, you know. Devotees would come to India and somehow or another find these tulsi and they come back with these monstrous beads. Or then they started growing these tulsi, I think, in the Philippines. And the weather and the soil, everything's very favorable. So they would grow very large and then they would carve them into very nice beads. So that was the thing. If you had those beads, that was like a symptom of great advancement. You know, very big, very smooth beads. Or, you know, if you had very monstrous neck beads, or, you know, one time it was the, what do you call it? That necklace that has the Hare Krishna carved on the little, like, arrows, you know, or if you had Bugalbandis, or, you know, different things, you know, all these different fads went through, and if you had that, then, you know, this is a serious devotee, you know, like that. So, the one is that the good point of that is that they want to be, devotional service is the perfection. Advancing in devotional service is the perfection. The tradition of devotional service is the perfection. So they figure if they're following it, then they're reached a very high level of perfection. You know, the difficulty is that that's not exactly how the process works. It may be part of the process, but it's not fully the process. You know? The following the footsteps is one thing, you know, but that doesn't mean that one has, by that, and then you can sit back and say, okay, that's it, we're the most advanced. So that aspect is there. So one has to be careful of this. So therefore the acharyas, generally you'll see they'll always follow the culture very nicely. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was living in his family, he studied nicely in all the Sanskrit and the different things, and he specialized in astronomy. Then he became king of the minister for some time, like Tripura, as his like advisor and astrologer, these aspects, and, you know, learning all these things and moving in these very educated and aristocratic circles. Then he took up shelter with Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, took up the chanting, did that very nicely, would sit in his hut. And the hut was not, it wasn't such great shape, so when it would rain, the roof would leak. So his solution was is just put up an umbrella. So he would sit there and he would chant and all these different things. And then at one point, then he took up the preaching mission. And then you see established very nicely the brahmacharis, the sannyasis, the grihastas, the vanaprastas, like that. He had the varnashram thing very, very organized. And he would follow it very nicely himself. Srila Prabhupada would follow very nicely, very strictly. So these things were there. It's the culture. It's not fanaticism, it's just the culture. The common culture of the devotees. But if there's attachment to that, that is not considered. It means in the beginning it may be there, as long as there's also attachment to Krishna. So one's advancement is how much one's attached to Krishna, how much one is attached to the material activities. Right? But with time, then, attachment is to Krishna, and the varnashram activities still continue. So that is basically given here. So that aspect of following the culture of Krishna consciousness and that, and following this varnashram, in with devotional service as a anga or a branch of devotional service, then we see here that that's basically that is what is meant here by servitorship. You know, we serve the Lord in devotional service and we follow the Lord's culture, which is the Varnashram culture. Ideally without any attachment to the culture. I mean, attachment to the, you know, to the facilities and all this of the culture, and specifically to the piety of the culture. And but in the beginning, that attachment may be there, and that's not a problem. That will go with time as one performs the service. So we'll have to ask for questions here, since it is a little too dark to read the next section. Okay, so we can discuss this until the current comes. Can you speak loudly?
It's mentioned here that Varnashram, just Varnashram, is also considered devotee.
Yes.
But we see demons, they also follow Varnashram. Can you
see? See, when we say the demons also follow Varnashram, but they follow the Asuric Varnashram, which is based on birth and simply purely sense gratification. The Daiva Varnashram means one follows Varnashram, God's system, and that it's God one understands, but when you're following it because you must please God. So we would call them technically ordinary devotees. They're not sampradayic devotees. See, in here, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, you have ordinary devotee means one who basically accepts, means one who would be following Varnashram very nicely. It means that, I think in the Vishnu Dharmotra or something, it mentions that if you, for 100 births, I've heard two different quotes on this. One is, if 100 births you follow Varnashram perfectly, no mistakes, you go to Vaikuntha. Another one is, if you do that for 100 births, you go to Brahmaloka. You know? Like that. In either case, you're going to, even if we take it just as going to Brahmaloka, then one is there with Lord Brahma, and then at the end of Brahma's life, one goes to Mahavishnu. So then one sees the Lord, one is free, one is liberated from the material world, one sees the Lord. But generally, because of their attachment to the Varnashram system, they generally come back into the material world to continue performing those activities. Right. Of leading the universe in the proper culture. Then you have those who, let's say, they're born in the family of devotees or in the family, in these like Goswami families, like these, you know, Nityananda Vamsas and Advaita Vamsas and all these different things. They know about Krishna and they basically within their heart accept Krishna as God, but they don't necessarily follow the rules and regulations very strictly. Or maybe they wear tilak and this and that, but they're, you know, they're just, in other words, they're not really determined to follow the process of sadhana bhakti very carefully. And they haven't necessarily surrendered to the spiritual master who can then guide them very strictly. They, in other words, bhajana kriya they don't take up so much. They have shraddha, faith, and sadhu sangha, they associate with devotees. But their bhajana kriya it's not regular. It's not so strong. But then when one surrenders to the spiritual master and takes up very seriously the details of devotional service, this bhajana kriya, then one is called sampradayic devotee. Right? You understand? So the ordinary devotee, anyone who accepts Vishnu as supreme is called a devotee, technically. Right? They're devotees, though they're ordinary, meaning that they're not. It's not ordinary in the way that we would think of generally in the material sense. It just means within the realm of spiritual life, it's means simple. Simple. It's just, they're devotees, but it's just that much only. Does that make some sense? Right? Because the demons follow the Varnashram because they know that by following the Dharma, Artha will come. It means they're demons, but it doesn't say they're stupid. Right? Right? Demons are very clever. They want to enjoy the material nature. So the very sophisticated ones have understood that by following the Varnashram system, you're going to get the best facility out of material nature. Right? It's just like you have someone who wants to deal with a machine. And so the intelligent person knows if I follow the manual, I'll get the most understanding, the most use out of the machine. Right? Just like people use computers, they have a program, computer program. Some of these programs can do thousands of things. How many know it? Because they never look at the manual. So they get just their little bit of work done and that's it. And so they've understood that you want to enjoy the material world, you have to follow Varnashram. Just like Bali Maharaj, he wants to take over the heavenly planets. He very seriously worships the spiritual master. And they're demons. And their only purpose of worshiping the spiritual master is to get sovereignty of the material world. But because this is the process in the scriptures, they are successful. Right? And Indra, in his pride of his position, he insults his guru. He neglects. He didn't specifically go up to him and just say, "You're a jerk." When Brihaspati came in, he was absorbed in his music, and then so he didn't miss him coming in, didn't even notice in that, and stand up. He didn't respect. So therefore, then the Brihaspati went away, and from that Indra fell down. So even on the mundane platform, if you don't follow the process that God's given, there's no benefit. No benefit. We may falsely be misled, seeing the karmis are getting so much facility. But you see, all these cultures where they're getting facility was based on some religion and based on something, you know, more strong. And then the fruits of that are coming to their culture. But slowly, slowly, we see those fruits are also becoming less and less and disappearing. Right? America was founded on religious freedom. The people wanted to go and practice religion. That's why it was founded. Right? And you see all the countries in Europe, this and that, they all have a strong religious position. The Holy Roman Empire and all these different things. And the fruits come. You follow religion, you get results. And now, because they're not very religious, some results are still coming from before. Very great. Results are generally very pious results for an activity done. Right? So then, they're still getting something. So if we're misled and think, well, they're getting, you know, by not following, why do we have to follow? Prabhupada says that. And I think in Upadeshamrita. He says, if someone thinks they can get economic development without religion, they won't follow religion. They'll just go straight for the economic development. Right? So the demons, because they have spiritual masters and all that, and they do have, they study the Vedic literatures, but only for the purpose of enjoying the material world, they do know that unless you follow Dharma, you're not going to get Artha. So they're not stupid. They're intelligent in that way, though their intelligence is directed as enjoying the material world. Like that. So we see here, that's just the basis. That's human life. Human life starts with Varnashram. Right? Below Varnashram, there is not human life. That's called Malecha, Yavana, Chandala, and so many others. You know, what is it? Andhra, Pulinda, all these different things. Hunadi. And, Sabardas. Sometimes Prabhupada, one place Prabhupada translates Sabardas as Siberians. Like that. You know. So that's below. Human life means Varnashram. Right? Because we see in human life there's very nice exchange, very nice dealings. One doesn't follow it, it's not actually human life. You know? One can still be a devotee and not be a human. You know, like the monkey army of Ravana, they're not human. They're devotees. You know, so they're a little wild, you know. You give things to them, they, you know, like a pearl necklace, they eat it. And when they came back from, when they found where Sita was, then instead of coming straight back to tell Sugriva, they just immediately marched into the royal garden. you know, the whole army just went into there and they were jumping from tree to tree and eating all the fruits and drinking all the honey and breaking the branches and yelling and screaming and totally intoxicated and everything. So this isn't really what you call most, you know, cultured bunch. And so, but from that, then, you know, Sugriva and his ministers, and they could understand they must have good news. Otherwise, they wouldn't dare to do that, because they know that they would get a very strong reaction from the king from going into his personal garden and making an absolute mess of it. But they were so much in ecstasy that, you know, they just did what monkeys like to do. Right? So it doesn't mean one can't be a devotee, but it just means that the fineness of human existence won't be experienced. Right? So then one can say, that's not important. That's fine, as long as one is not attached to the material nature. But if one is, then it's recommended one approaches it through Varnashram. So we have this like catch 22, is you can't be attached to Varnashram in the material world, but if you are attached to the material world, you should follow Varnashram. Right? You understand? You should follow Varnashram. If attached to material, follow Varnashram, but perfection is to not be attached to it. So it's like, it's a stepping stone. It gets you from animal life to human life to transcendental. So it's the recommended way to do it. So we see, therefore, anybody who follows Varnashram accepts Vishnu as supreme, even though they may be completely doing it for their own sense gratification. They're still considered devotees because they've accepted the supremacy of the Lord and they've accepted the process or culture and path of the Lord. Though the actual and neglecting lower end of it, they're taking the little goal of it. Right? Does that make some sense? You know, just like we're cooking for the deities. So someone may be cooking because they know that I cook nicely, I get something nice to eat. You know? But they know that they're part of the process, and someone else will come and take it and offer it, and all that, and that, because there are results in the proper karma kanda. The results have to be offered. So then here they're doing that, right? But we know that the proper thing is I'm cooking for Krishna, to please Krishna. Do you understand? It's an obvious subtle difference, but this makes the difference between, you know, the beginning stages, the intermediate stages, and then the advanced, you know, the position of pure enlightenment service. Right? So it's a simple thing. It means one has to follow some culture. There's no one on the planet who's not following a culture unless they're completely crazy. I mean, clinically crazy. And then generally see all people who are clinically crazy, they follow a basic similar culture. But everybody follows a culture that they've accepted. So now it's just a matter of which of the 8,400,000 it falls in. You know, if it's, you know, how you say? If it's animal, or, you know, basically subhuman, or if it's human. Because of the 400,000 human, most of them are uncivilized. Uncivilized, the definition is they don't follow Varnashram. So civilized, they follow Varnashram. Then that means then they generally accept the Lord. Then of those, then very few are interested in liberation. Of those interested, very few endeavor for it. Of those who endeavor, very few get it. Right? And then of those who are interested in God, you know, directly, they want to become the Lord's devotees, those are the fewest. Very rare. So this is there in the teachings of Sanatana Goswami. You know, that he starts off discussing all these different aspects. And also in the Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, these are described. I think it's in the prayers of Jambudvip, either that or that's the Kim Purushas. Like Kim Purushas are a they're one of the, I guess the 400,000, is, they kind of look like humans, but they don't quite, you know, they're like a human with a horse head or, you know, other things like this. So they're called Kim Purusha. Kim means what, and Purusha means human. So Kim Purusha means what kind of human is this? You know, like that. And then there's another ones, I'm not exactly sure, they're also fairly similar kind of thing. They're called the Kinaras. Because Nara means man. So Kinara means the same. Kim means what kind of man is this? So they have some unique features like that. So the basic principles are there. As we mentioned here, is that there's so much within the Varnashram system that's meant for sense gratification. So the serious devotees drop all that. The Karmakandis keep all that because they very much want the fruit. The devotees aren't really interested so much in the fruit. They may have some attachment for it, but it's very minimal. You know, if in our own heart we'll look at it as very great, but we see in the lives of the devotees it's very minimal. You know, they get attached to a little thing, like you know, they get attached to different things. You know, like this flood now, they got to have a room, they got to have an attached bath, they got to have different things. You know, like 10 years ago, never really thought about. If you just had a dry place, that was good enough. So some little attachments are there, but those are very minor compared to their main thrust of thought of devotional service, sadhana, and the chanting and performing nice service. So others don't look at it so seriously. But the individual looks at it very seriously in their own heart. Right? That's why we see the prayers of the acharyas and the songs. They always look at themselves quite critically. But with others, they're very broad-minded. Like that. So that is not looked at part. But those who are seriously into Karmakanda, though they accept Vishnu as supreme, they follow all the technical little rules that will bring them all kinds of material facilities. You know, so for the sampradayak and especially our line, the Gaudiyas, all that's dropped. Now in the present time it's not dropped so much. Much of it's dropped. Means all the worship of the demigods and all that is dropped with the Madhvas and the Shris, but some other aspects they do follow quite a lot. But for us, we drop most of it. We just basically keep the cultural aspects so that maintains the relationships and the social structure and social interaction. That we maintain. But the fruitive aspect of the Varnashram we drop. We leave the basically just the proper, the aspects of etiquette that we accept. But if we aren't educated in the system of Varnashram, then we consider that to be very great. And when it is said that we drop Varnashram, we say this is what we throw out. You know, like being nice to people or giving shelter or being submissive or offering respect or having controlled sense. We throw all that out because that is Varnashram. Right? But if you look at it, that's also devotional service. Right? Because in the beginning, there was devotional service. And then from that, it has expanded for the materialistic living entities to be, you know, what they call. The other lights will come on, or they may or may not come on. Does that make some sense, or right? Means what Rupa Goswami has recommended, what the acharyas, what Prabhupada has recommended in the way of Varnashram for us, it's basically just how to organize society so that everybody becomes engaged in Krishna's service according to their nature. But one has to follow that nature. One can't cheat. That was the business before of the kings, is you can't cheat. You can't say one thing and do another. You had to follow what you say. Right? If you're going to be a Brahmin, then one has to live the life of a Brahmin. One's going to say, to be a Kshatriya, one has to live that life. One's going to be a Vaishya, one has to live that life. A Shudra, one has to live that life. One can't not live it and claim to be that. That's not Varnashram. So one just has to be educated so that one understands what it is. I mean, it's not a big thing. Prabhupada is always talking about it in his books. You know? Yeah, it says here, the system of Varnashram and the prescribed duties under this system are so designed that the conditioned soul may enjoy in the material world according to his desire for sense gratification, at the same time gradually become elevated to spiritual understanding. Under these prescribed duties of Varna and Ashram, there are many activities which belong to devotional service in Krishna consciousness. That's all that. It's designed like that. It's designed in such a way that you go through it. You know, it's just like it's understand. You design a new bhakta program. The new bhaktas aren't great, elevated, advanced devotees. Right? But by going through that program, they're doing so much devotional service. Their mind is off this way and off that way, and when's lunch, and, you know, when are we going to stop working, and when do we get to sleep, and, you know, and every moment they can, they're talking pajalta and all this and that. But the program is designed to keep them doing the activities. But the things that they're interested in, the eating, the sleeping, the hanging out, and all, it gets done. But it's all in line with Krishna. You understand? So the whole Varnashram system is then something that's so big it includes the whole society. And how it interfaces with each other. And so all the devotional service, everything is already worked into it. So if one understands it, then what happens is one emphasizes those aspects, and the aspects that are more for one's own pleasure, then one doesn't get involved in that. That doesn't mean he plays them down. He doesn't get involved. You can't involve yourself and play them down. Just like you see so many times, people will play down marriage. You know, they get married, they don't spend any time with their wife, they don't, you know, arrange any facilities, nothing and this and that. They're also aloof and all this and very advanced. But why did they get married? Right? So in the traditional system, that wouldn't be allowed. You're so aloof, don't get married. You're not so aloof, you get married and you do those duties. So you can live very simply. Brahmins live very simply. They don't have much facility, because they don't want to get overly involved. Or if more facility comes very easily without over-endeavor, it may be accepted if it's favorable. If it's not favorable, then they also give in charity. Right? Somebody gives you 10,000 cows, you may not need 10,000. You may only need 5, so you give the rest away. You know, but if you're running a huge school and somebody gives you 10,000 cows, then it may help maintain your school. Right? Many times kings would give big villages or big things to Brahmins to manage their schools or universities. So they may have a lot, but if it's not favorable for them, they'll keep very little. So then that's the Brahmin. So he's doing it. You know, they'll spend the time, but the time is less. Right? If you have less material facilities, you have less involvement, the anxiety and the mental disturbances are going to be less. So husband and wife can naturally be more absorbed in their service. And they keep more facility, then, you know, there's more time has to be spent straightening out the heads. Right? You understand? So the whole idea is that the whole Varnashram system, it's all worked in, and you just emphasize those ones. But one can't play around. You know, one can't take a leadership position not give shelter to the devotees. You know, one can't do business and not give in charity. One can't work for others and disrespect who you work for. Right? One can't be a student and be into sense gratification. Right? You understand the whole? You can't mix like that, because they don't give good result. No one is satisfied if any of these things happen. Right? I mean, if you look, dissatisfaction of devotees, you look at it, you actually find out, if you go down to the root, what actually is the point, it's a social problem. We don't really have any philosophical problems in our movement. If you look at them, really, there's no philosophical problems. We mistake social problems as philosophical, then we create our own philosophies and our own philosophical problems, but they don't come from, they all come from social, you know, devotees living outside because they feel they've been, you know, disenfranchised by the dealings of the leaders in their zone. That's social. It's nothing to do with the philosophy. The leaders didn't give shelter, or they were not good followers, so no one could deal with them. Or both. You know? You understand? I mean, we won't go into everything unless somebody wants to ask, but otherwise, it's just an understanding of what's actually behind it. We may say it's a philosophy because the leader may have quoted some Gita shlokas to get you to do what they wanted to do, but because the mood wasn't right, therefore the dissatisfaction was there. So that was the culture. Philosophy may have been right, but how it was applied may not have been. Or the person may be thinking they're doing nicely, but they're not. They're not following properly either the culture. So therefore, the relationships don't get established. Does that make some sense? Can you speak loudly? The Mayavadi philosophers, oh, they're some of the best at following it. They preach, I mean, I've seen a book this fat by one of the leading Shankaracharyas just on following Dharma and everything like that. Because their thing is you have to follow the scriptures. The scriptures say follow Dharma. And so then you must do it. But their whole idea is at one point it's left and then you become God. You know, like you approach a spiritual master. But at one point, then, when you actually become advanced, you don't need the spiritual master, because just that there's a designation of spiritual master and disciple, that's Maya. So then that's left, and then you become God. But for us, it doesn't work like that. For us, we approach the spiritual master, and we see serving the spiritual master is serving God. So that relationship is always maintained, because that's the way it's always going to be for us. Right? The jivas always are serving someone. Right? There's no, that I haven't come across, there's no jivas that have a direct relationship with Krishna with no one in between. I've never heard of it. Right? The internal potency is already there, the eternal associates. Right? It means Nanda Baba and Mother Jashoda, they are the manifestation of the perfection of pure transcendental parental love for Krishna. So all others interested in parental affection serve under them. Right? So this principle of seeing Krishna through somebody, that has to be established. So Krishna doesn't want us playing around with his, you know, in his lila and making a mess there. So we practice that here in the material world. So that is practiced by seeing God through the spiritual master. Right? Like that. The principle of seeing God through the spiritual master is there, whether he is on the Uttama platform, Madhyam platform, or Kanista platform. So of the three, it's always recommended that one finds an Uttama. But that principle, because they're not an Uttama, they may be a Madhyam or Kanista, cannot be thrown out. Only those with a poor fund of knowledge would do such a thing. Because we see even the demons headed by Bali Maharaj, understood this principle. Not necessarily seeing God, but that you have to respect the spiritual master. And they did it, and they took over the universe. Right? Because that's God's principle. God has established this principle. And whether you're a gross materialist or you want to become a pure, unalloyed devotee, you have to follow this principle. That's why Prabhupada mentioned that even a Kali worshipper in India is better situated than a very religious Christian in the West. Because they follow the Vedic systems of approaching Guru, then following the rituals according to the shastras, controlling the senses. They do, it's all the same. Basically, they do what we do. Just we're dealing in goodness, pure goodness. They're dealing in ignorance. Right? But you just have to replace their tantra guru with a bona fide guru, and their deity, the demigod, with Krishna. And the basically, the form of it is the same. Right? You see, they do kirtan. Right? They make offerings to their deity. They dance before the deity. Right? They always think of their deity. They do what we do. But just it's because the whole thing's in ignorance. Because its motive, its goal is sense gratification. Well, you change the goal and put in pure and alloyed devotional service. Right? And that our relationship is with Krishna, not with Mahakali. And the process, we follow it, the sattvic aspects of the Vedic system rather than the rajasic or tamasic. And it's easy. It's very easy for someone of that to switch to this. It's more difficult for someone from a non-Vedic to switch. Because it's hard for them to switch the culture. People are attached to the culture. Right? Here we're talking about being attached to Varnashram is not so good for devotional service in the higher stages, let alone being attached to non-Vedic culture. Right? But the point is the ultimate point is one's devotion and surrender to the Lord. You know, because as we mentioned, it doesn't matter, even the monkeys of Ramachandra's army are considered very glorious. Does that make sense? So the Mayavadis may be very expert at presenting the culture because their idea is this is the way that you're going to get yourself to the platform of goodness. And then from goodness, you're going to become God. So we follow the same culture, get ourselves to goodness, reject the goodness, but come to the stage of pure unalloyed devotional service and see ourselves as the pure servants of God. So in the impure state, when we're not pure servants, we're following the system that elevates us to the platform of liberation. From the platform of liberation, the devotee continues to prema bhakti. But for the impersonalist, that's the end of the line. They follow the Vedic system to elevate themselves to the platform of liberation and then stop right there. Right? And that's the impersonalist. The Mayavadis don't even get that far. They never even get liberated. Because they're offensive. Impersonalists aren't offensive. They just don't have complete knowledge. Right? So the system, if you want to get to the platform of liberation, you have to follow Varnashram with detachment. Right? That's mentioned here. Yeah, it says, those who are engaged in fruitive activities, prescribed duties according to the four orders of social and spiritual life are not actually pure devotees. But still, because they are offering the result to the Lord, they are accepted as devotees. Because they're offering the result. So their idea is to become pure devotees. So therefore, when they come to the liberated stage, the devotees keep going because their goal is, they have a goal. It means what is your goal? That's where you're aiming for. Right? So the impersonalist, Their goal is simply liberation. So they offer the fruits of their work. And that brings them to that liberated platform. Right? Let's explain. The process of Naishkarmya will bring one to the platform of liberation. But unless you are doing it as a devotee and understand that there's something beyond liberation, the real liberation of service to God, you don't go beyond that point. You just get to that point and stop. Like we see Sukadeva Goswami. He was on the platform of liberation. And he was satisfied. You know, they're saying, well, why don't you take birth? Well, it says inside and outside is the same, so why should I even make the endeavor? Why should I bother? Right? So there, then when he heard that there's something beyond liberation, that there is the pure, unalloyed devotional service of the Lord, that attracted him because he was already liberated. Because that was transcendental taste. And so then he took up devotional service. So we want to give up the material world. So therefore, following Varnashram, giving up the result, breaks our attachment to the material world. And by following devotional service and associating with devotees, hearing, chanting, all these different processes, Rupa Goswami, that attracts us to Krishna. So when these two are put together, one goes beyond liberation to Prema Bhakti. And if one doesn't, if one only does the one, it'll bring one up to liberation. And then we know, from the acharyas, that's generally it's a temporary situation. That for some time it will be on that, but because the soul by nature has to do activity, he will again fall. That makes sense? Yes? No? Yeah. Anything else on this? Or we'll move on. Loudly. Means the root of them. They may be philosophical now. Like I said, they may create their own philosophy. The root of it. Just like you have your Ritvik philosophy. What's the root of it? The root of it is, well, gurus fall down and it breaks relationships. It breaks our heart. We don't want our heart broken. Right? That you talk to any of them. That's what they say. So what is it? They've created a philosophy in which their heart won't be broken. Right? Because it's a heartless philosophy. There's no relationship, so therefore, right? There's no diksha relationship with Prabhupada, so therefore you can't have your heart broken. Right? It means they say that there is, but according to Shastra, there's not. So they've created their own system so that they won't have their heart broken. That's the source of it. Then on top of that, then they'll bring in Shastra from here and there and try to prove their point. But that's the root. Because if you get right down to it, that's their point. They'll just say, people have, you know, so many times lost their guru. How many times can they give their heart and have it lost? Right? But that's the only aspect we're looking at. You know? I mean, it's a big discussion in itself. But my point is that's the hell aspect. But from this is that we haven't understood fully the social thing ourselves. Right? You know, where does it say that our only relationship in spiritual life is only with the Diksha Guru? And where does it say in our line that Diksha is the most important element? Right? Just like, what would you say to somebody who lives in a joint family? You know, big group of, you know, whole, you know, all the brothers and uncles and cousins and grandparents and everything like that. They'll only relate with their own father. They won't talk to anybody else. They don't trust them. They don't deal with them. You know, if somebody gives advice, they don't care for it. What would you say of that person? Would you say that that is a balanced member of the family? No. But that's what goes on. The whole point is our main thrust is siksha. That's what our relationship is with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, even his own disciples, he says the Vani is more important than the Vapu. How many of his, 5,000-10,000 disciples, personally, directly were able to do some direct service to his Vapu? And how many of them are worshipping on Vani? And today, what do you have? Even his initiated disciples, they're serving his Vani. Right? So that's the important aspect. So on that platform, everybody in ISKCON has a relationship with Prabhupada based on Siksha. Everybody can approach the books. Everybody can hear about Prabhupada. Everyone can follow his example. So everybody in ISKCON is a Siksha disciple of Prabhupada. Right? And then we have those who assist Prabhupada in this mission as the founder acharya. And that are the senior devotees, the preachers. And from amongst those who we have may have relationships with many, one of them is prominent and has given us diksha, which now we are then, according to Pancharatra, recognized in the line that we're serious for following sadhana bhakti. Right? Sadhana bhakti is based on these principles of the Pancharatra. Pancharatra means there must be initiation. Right? And so our relationship with that Diksha Guru is based on what? Instruction. Right? That's why we've chosen them, because of the instruction. But once that happens, there's some mysterious thing, we forget that. And then the Diksha aspect becomes the main. Just like nowadays, someone is choosing a Diksha Guru, Guru. Their whole idea is, I'm choosing my Diksha Guru. And then as soon as they've decided, then whoever that person is, they're their Diksha Guru, even though they're not initiated. It's just time, that's all. They don't worry about developing the Siksha relationship. Right? But unless the Siksha relationship is strong, how will the Diksha be of any great benefit? Right? Because it's the instruction of the spiritual master you have to follow. Right? So one has one's father, one knows that is one's how one is connected with the whole family. But it's not that others one doesn't take advice and all that and have relationships with and gain from. But one doesn't forget one's father. Right? So we don't forget Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya of this mission. We're all working for Prabhupada. Right? And within that, then we're working under others, in his family. And then we have the person who gives diksha, where we have that formal relationship and allegiance to. And at the same time, his siksha is there, and with so many others. And then one has to balance those relationships. Right? But otherwise, why are there so many preachers? I mean, when I was a devotee, brahmachari, when Prabhupada was present, then most of us worked under the leading members of the society at that time. Very few worked directly with Prabhupada. Right? Most worked under the senior devotees. And we felt an obligation to those senior devotees, because they inspired us in our service to Prabhupada. Right? They gave us shelter, they gave us direction, and they taught us how to serve Prabhupada. Therefore, they were dear, very dear to us. We used to respect them more than today gurus are respected now. A sannyasi would come to your temple, you'd wash their feet in the temple. Yeah, sannyasi, not a guru. A sannyasi, a god brother. You know? That was our temple. And I've heard in other temples, GBC showed up, this one, that, and the grihasas, they wash their feet also. I mean, our temple, on the Sunday feast, we used to wash the feet of the guests. You know? I mean, two reasons. One, it was just culture, and two, we couldn't stand the smell of their feet. So it had a dual purpose. But I mean, those days, I mean, washing, that was just such a normal thing, as normal as it is in India. Now it's such a strange, obscure, esoteric ritual that just really doesn't fit into the, you know, sophisticated Western mentality. Right? So the whole thing was, is it didn't, it, we didn't worry about these things. Right? I mean, you respected God brethren and worked under them. So the same principle goes on today. But now that person is your, maybe the person who's given you the Pancharatrik Diksha, because Pancharatrik Diksha has to be taken from somebody who's alive. Siksha you can take from anybody, even they're not. You know, we read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, we take Siksha from him. You can't take Diksha from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Siksha you can take. We're here, we're reading Rupa Goswami's book. We're taking Siksha from Rupa Goswami through our Acharya. Right? So, in this way, is that whoever is serving Prabhupada, it means the reason that we have so much affection for the senior devotees and our spiritual masters, because they are teaching us how to serve Prabhupada, how to serve Rupa Goswami, how to serve Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. And if they decide to make up their own movement, then, you know, we feel bad that the relationship is broken, but we couldn't care less about it. That's where we part ways. Our allegiance is to Prabhupada. Our allegiance is to this movement. Our allegiance is not to an individual who has his own idea. Right? They speak according to what Prabhupada says, we have a relationship. They speak what Prabhupada doesn't say, we don't have the same relationship anymore. You know, it means materially we may be good friends, but spiritually we don't have a whole lot. They're not the leader and us the follower. You understand? But we have taken it other than that, right? We have taken it. Somebody makes up his own philosophy and devotees walk out the door with them. And which is obviously not in line with what Prabhupada says. Because we're not following the process properly. Because we only see that much. Other senior devotees we're not relating to now. Right? Even just regular devotees we're not relating to. Right? So that's the whole thing. We're not following the culture. Because the culture and the philosophy you can't separate. Culture is part of Abhideya, or the process. But just so you have three levels of that culture. You have the Bhagavat, you have the Pancharatrika, and you have the Vedic. But each one is expanding from the other. Bhagavat's the original. And that contains all the elements of Pancharatrika and Vedic that are in line with pure devotional service. Then the Pancharatrika expands more into different things that are all in line, especially with the deity worship. And it includes all the elements of Vedic culture that are important in deity worship. And then the Vedic culture then contains the elements of devotional service, plus it has extra stuff for those who are more materially inclined. Right? So those aspects of devotional service down to that point, from the Bhagavat, Pancharatrika, and the Vedic, we accept, and what's below that we reject. Make sense? So the point comes back to this. We don't know how to establish relationships. Someone comes to the movement, they see so many devotees, they make relationships with so many. But then when one of those persons they accept as the Diksha Guru, presently, generally, they reject all the other ones. Reject or they cut off the relationship. And then that one person is all that they have. And then if that person, something happens, you have nothing. But why they would have nothing? The whole process is when you come to the movement, you take shelter of Prabhupada as the founder Acharya. Then after, you know, 6 months, and you can start looking around for somebody. Then you can take initiation from them. Then if your guru falls, you take shelter of Prabhupada again. So what happened to Prabhupada in the middle? That is the problem. Prabhupada should have been there the whole way through. And we should see the relationship of the spirit. We should see the spiritual master in relationship to the Prabhupada, ourselves in relationship to Prabhupada. That's missing in the middle. Right? Therefore, the whole point, if you're going to go back and take shelter of Prabhupada, then, you know, then there should only be Prabhupada. So this is misjudging there. No, Prabhupada should have been there the whole time, and that's expanded by association of devotees. You understand? So this whole thing of relationships we've just missed. There's a spiritual master, and that's it. And we worship him externally, and that's it. I've seen devotees jump up and down I mentioned this point about certain things. Okay, you can't wash feet, this, that, now. And that's not the big deal. That's just part of the culture. Those who don't understand the culture, it's a big deal for them. Those who've grown up in India where the culture is like that, washing their feet's the most ordinary thing. I mean, you can just go out and do a kirtan in the village, the people come and wash your feet. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, it's no big deal. You know, it's like going to someone's house, they offering you a seat. You know? It's not something overly special. But because that's not there, now they figure their whole relationship with their guru is like lost. Right? No, but their relationship's supposed to be the following the instructions, following the example. And trying to become inspired in serving Prabhupada. Right? So it's just not understood. Does this make some sense? Right? Diksha is all the way through, but it just takes different forms for the Bhagavat, the Pancharatrika, and the Vedic. In the Bhagavat, it's simply accepting the person as a Siksha Guru. That is Diksha. Like it says, the six Goswamis are direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya. Have you ever seen any Pancharatrika ritual? No. But do you see instruction? Yes. So the Rupa and Sanatana Siksha in Allahabad, that was their initiation. Right? According to the Bhagavad. But that can only be, that is only, you can only take advantage of that alone if one is on the liberated platform. Those who are on the liberated platform can follow that purely, and that's all. That's enough for them, because they don't have any material contamination. Pancharatrika is necessary if we have material contamination. We have a conditioned nature. Right, we're not freed from it. You need Pancharatra. Like that. And if we're very socially attached to facilities and position and all those kind of relationships that go beyond just as devotees, then you have to have Varnashram. Right? So just depending upon what is the degree of conditioning, you must have these three systems. So the Pancharatra regulates us so that we don't commit any, we don't get attached to sinful activities. Right? And the Vedic, its whole point is it brings one near the spiritual master, means one takes up learning knowledge from them, siksha. That you start the process, you learn the whole Vedic literatures and all those kind of things. The transcendental literature is, in the Vedic system, there's no actual initiation for learning the spiritual, transcendental topics, right? But for learning the Vedic material topics, like the Vedic mantras and all these things, that you need to have the initiation for. That's why it's called Upanayanam, to bring near. It's not fully spiritual life. That's why many times Prabhupada uses the word real spiritual initiation. He's meaning Upanayanam is not real spiritual initiation. Like that. It means, if you're familiar with the whole culture, you understand. That's why sometimes it's called Twija. First birth is the animal birth. Second birth is the Dwija. when you get Upanayanam, the Vedic initiation. And then third birth is when you actually take Pancharatrik, or spiritual initiation. So that's thrice born. So technically we're thrice born. We're not twice born, we're thrice born. Because we have when we get the second initiation, then we also get the Vedic mantra. Like that. So we're getting both at once. Is that understood? Say again? The mantras we're chanting. The first mantra is Vedic, and all the others are Pancharatrik. And the last one is the source of all the others. The Kama Gayatri is the source of all Gayatris, including the Vedic. No, this is Pancharatrik, it's not Bhagavat. Bhagavat means you sit down and chant the pure name, always remember Krishna, never forget him. That's Bhagavat. So we're not on that platform. Therefore, Pancharatrik. Even those who are on that platform for the preaching, because it pleases Lord Chaitanya, therefore they follow it also and set example. Right? So that's the Pancharatrik, that's not the Bhagavat. The holy name is free from these things. It doesn't require initiation. We have to hear it from someone who is pure. Right? Then that's all it requires. And then we've gotten the name. And then we just chant it. But how many can just chant all day and that's all? Right? The prostitute who approached Haridas Thakur. She just sat down and chanted Hare Krishna all day. Sat in front of Tulsi, chanted Hare Krishna all day. Didn't worry about her maintenance, didn't worry about anything. That's Bhagavad. Right? And then others, this Krishna arranges. Krishna will take care. You understand? Like that. So that, yes.
Is there a special
tune? Special tune.
Yeah.
That's there, but that's generally only by those who follow the... It's not so much. There is for the Brahma Gayatri, but that's for those who generally... How do you say? Who are trained in that science. Like that. But it's not so much. There is tunes for it. But it's not worth getting involved in them unless it's perfectly done. Because when you get into that, then there's six things you have to watch out for. It means each syllable has to be perfectly said properly. Then each syllable has a note. Each syllable has a perfect length. Each syllable has a strength. How strong is chanted or strong or weakly is chanted. It has its musical quality and it has its steadiness. What is the length that you give one, that length is, that same proportion is used for all of them. So if all those are there, then you get the perfection from that aspect. But that perfection will only be the, you know, material side. It's not the spiritual side. The spiritual side is the meditation. Is that one's supposed to meditate on each word, especially in the Gayatris, you have three parts. So you meditate on the meaning of each of the three parts and on the bead syllable. So that's generally how it's broken, into the bead syllable and then into each part. And then one meditates on the meanings of the Gayatri as one's chanting. That's more important. You know?
I heard there are some different meanings about different mantras. And I heard mantras that actually you're getting realization according to
Well, it's worshipping, how you say, we're all worshipping Lord Guru, Lord Chaitanya, and Radha and Krishna. Like that. So it's... See, realization comes following the direction of the spiritual master. We gain knowledge about devotional service. And we perform devotional service in a mood of devotion. Right? When that is done, then there's realization. So when knowledge and devotion and activities in devotion are combined, there's realization. Right? So the realization is given to us by the Sandini potency. Right? The knowledge is Samvit, the devotion is Ladini. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So like that. So we worship all three. We have to... See, what happens is many times Prabhupada's taken like hundreds of Gayatris and we've cut it down to just what we have. Given us just the essence. Right? Then we take that and then we try to take that and make that into the ocean of Gayatris and then cut it down to the essence. Right? Just like Vedic culture. Prabhupada and the Acharyas have already taken the ocean of Vedic culture, cut it down to what's just essential for devotional service, given us that, do that. Then we read about Varnashram and this and that, rejecting so many things because it's, you know, one has to give up the attachment. It doesn't say give up the activity, but we take it, give up the whole thing, because the materialistic thing is, why do an activity if you're not going to get the result? If you're giving up the result, you give up the activity. Right? So we take it like that. Then we throw out what the essence that is actually devotional service, we throw that out. If devotees understood what was the ocean of Varnashram, they couldn't handle it. Just like Prabhupada, they were, in the beginning, Prabhupada told them a few things about deity worship. And then devotees were very enthusiastic. Oh, tell us more. What more things? And Prabhupada said, if I told you everything there is, you'd faint. Like that. And it's true. I've dealt with, you know, traveling around, dealt with head pujaris. I've been head pujaris for years. And I tell them some of the technical aspects that are there, right in our Pancharatra Pradeep, that they're not using, applying properly. They can't understand it. It's just ununderstandable to them. It's too subtle. Right? So the whole point is, our Gayatris have already been cutting down. Guru, you're not going to get rid of Guru. Right? It's not the Vedic process. You have to have Guru. Gaur, we're only here because of Lord Chaitanya. Otherwise, there's no question we'd be picked up off the streets of wherever we were and whatever intoxicated condition we were in. Right? Vishnu doesn't pick up such people. He picks up pious people. That's what he says in the Bhagavad Gita. Impious people are picked up by devotees. So when Krishna takes the mood of a devotee, then the most fallen get picked up. And Lord Chaitanya is saying, you must worship Radha and Krishna. Because he is Radha and Krishna. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, anyone who worships Lord Chaitanya without Radha Krishna, or Radha Krishna without Lord Chaitanya, they're actually a demon. Right? And you can't approach either of them, our worshipable deity, without the spiritual master. So I don't think we have any excess Gayatris there. Right? So therefore it's not a matter of picking and choosing, well, who's our worshipable deity. When we say Ishtadev, when we say Lord Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, that's one deity. You can't separate them. We mean Nisringadev or, you know, how you say, Indra or Surya or Varuna or, you know, Varaha. It's like this. These are when we say Ishtadev. So our Ishtadev is already established. Right? Even we're worshipping Nisringadev. It's as Keshava. Krishna has come as Nisringadev to protect the Sankirtan movement. Right? Krishna in Vrindavan, he doesn't kill the demons. He takes his Vasudeva form to kill the demons. So his favorite form for killing demons is Nisringadev. Right? So we see in relationship to Krishna, this is Krishna. This, he's taken this form. You understand? So that aspect, that's not what's there. Is understanding what the mantras mean. First you have to understand, then there'll be some revelation. Right? So then one has to understand the parts of the Gayatri, what they mean. And then what the understanding comes. Right? Also the Gayatris, they have to be, there must be some platform of goodness, otherwise they don't function so well. The more one is situated in goodness and practices a pure lifestyle, then the more the Gayatris work. Hare Krishna doesn't work like that. No, there's no rule, no regulation, and no any time, circumstance. But the Gayatris, you don't live a pure lifestyle, have pure consciousness, they don't function very well. That's just the way they are. Right? That's why they're traditionally given to a Brahmin. Because a Brahmin lives the lifestyle that they can chant it. Well, the Hare Krishna mantra is independent like the Lord. Right? The Gayatris are not independent. Right? But the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is independent. So he can do what he likes. So we see the mantra elevates us and brings us to the point where we can actually follow the Pancharatrik system. Right? The mantra actually, by following, brings us to the point where we can follow the, you know, the rules and regulations of the Vedic system. Right? That is so that we can control our conditioned nature. Because we don't see the name and Krishna as non-different. If we did, then we wouldn't require. We can just chant Hare Krishna. But since we do see difference, we do make difference. And of the difference, we say this is good, this is not good. Right? Then that's there. But otherwise, says the advanced person, pebbles, stones, and gold are the same. They all belong to Krishna, and according to their nature, must be engaged in Krishna's service. So for them, there's not attraction or repulsion. You give them gold, they'll use it in Krishna's service. You give them pebbles, they'll use it in Krishna's service. Right? Like that. So it's a different platform. So if one's not on that platform, one requires the Pancharatra. So even the holy name is so kind, he makes us qualified to follow the Pancharatra. That's why so much emphasis is given in the Gita and other places about leading a pure lifestyle. Trying to establish oneself in the mode of goodness. But ultimately, we can't be attached to goodness because goodness is not pure. It still has passion and ignorance in it. So therefore, then we come to the platform of pure devotional service. Right? By continuous chanting and cultivation. Then that works nicely. Does that make some sense? What time is it now? We're getting late. 10 to 7. Oh, so we're way over time. So does that make some sense there? Okay. So we'll end here. Chai. Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandini.